You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the How to Hunt Turkey podcast. I'm your host, Jace Greer, and with me today, I'm going to have Madison Cole of Mad Guy Outdoors. He's out there doing habitat stuff. He's out there doing hunting stuff. He's also a construction worker, just an all-around super good guy, dialed in on the outdoors. He's got a lot of really cool stuff to say about hunting, hunting public land, learning stuff from birds. You guys are going to really enjoy this. So this is not your typical podcast episode where I start with like a pointed question. We were just talking and we just started getting into some stuff that was just too good to stop and start over. So you're going to hear him talking first, just kind of about the moment when he kind of had to go from like an average turkey hunter to reaching that next level. And so that's what this episode's about, is helping you reach the next level. Hope you guys enjoy it.
The last several years, I've really kind of, I don't want to say graduated, but I've lost a lot of the private ground that I've had. I've at one time, man, I had a little over 4,000 acres in Kansas, and you know, it was some of the most prime stuff you could ever imagine, you know. And looking back, you know, growing up, it's like you don't realize how good you had it, you know. Yeah. So now we've had a lot of outfitters move in, a lot of the big ranches that I was on, you know, I say big ranches, anywhere from 500 to 1,000 acres type land, have subdivided out. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's harder to get in on those places again. And I still have a decent amount, but the last several years I've gone strictly public. And for me, and don't get me wrong, if I see a bird on private, you know, I'll try to get permission, or I may look at it and it may be on a place that I already have. But
sure.
I'm trying to think here, man. The last private land bird I killed would have been last year in Missouri on a buddy's place of mine. It's kind of central Missouri. But other than that, all my Kansas birds, and probably for the last 5 years for sure, have been on public. And I don't know. I think that's kind of what forced me out of my little bubble, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
For me.
Yeah, but there's nothing like losing permissions that'll make you come to the realization of how good a hunter you actually are versus how good you think you are.
Yep, exactly.
It's like, oh yeah, I'm a great turkey hunter. Well, it turns out I just had one farm figured out, and the birds do the same thing every day. And then you get out somewhere else, and you're like, wow, this is what starting from scratch feels like.
You're exactly right. It'll humble you very quickly. It did for me.
But, dude, I've been running around just being routinely humbled all season long. I'm only like, today's the fifth day of season, and I just feel like, I feel ridiculous about the whole thing, you know?
Oh, I hear you. It is crazy, man. Like, you know, 2 days, and this sounds ridiculous, but 2 days going into a season of opener, because I think now I'm getting better, but whenever I first started like hunting public, I was like, man, I still don't have a bird down. And that sounds ridiculous. But, no, you know, 2 days in, I was so spoiled, you know. Uh-huh. But I will say, you know, our bird numbers really plummeted. I think all across the Midwest, they really did. And, you know, I remember fall flocks of 200 to 300 birds, you know, and just ridiculous amount of birds back in the day. But I think we're slowly but surely getting back to some pretty good numbers. I've seen a lot of birds so far this year, and throughout the fall.
That's
this
great.
Past fall, but yeah.
Yeah, I've had a similar thing here, like lots of decline of birds. And you know, it's so funny, once you do get your bird, all the time you spent hunting it, you're like, dude, that happened so fast. That was great. I'm so glad that I got to hunt this long for this bird or whatever.
Yep.
And as soon as you're on the other side of success, everything that you did is like, oh, that's totally fine. It was totally fine. It took me that long. But like, dude, first day, I did not, shocking, didn't tag out on the first day. And I was like, oh no, it's never going to happen. I thought there would be more birds this year, but there's none. And then like, fast forward to yesterday, like I was able to get in on a bird on my grandpa's place. And there hasn't been a bird on my grandpa's place in at least 3 years, really.
Really? Yeah.
To some terrible farming practices by someone who's renting the place. And this year, though, like those fields were actually short enough grass that birds would get in them. And it was like wonderful. I was like, the good old days are back. Everything is great. Sunshine and roses. And like the whole 3 days before, I was just like losing my mind about it.
All it takes is one. All it takes is one.
That's it, man. I literally almost walked into this bird, like, and just there it was, fell into my lap, kind of a deal. And that's the truth, man. It just takes one. But yeah, so like, as we talk, I want to dive into this idea of like those things that have leveled you up. So like you were saying earlier, you kind of lost all your hunting permissions, not all of them per se, but like most of them. And you had to jump into public land. So I'm sure you had a lot of realizations. Let's just start with a broad overview. So like for you, what was like one of your first realizations going from a bunch of sweet permission pieces to like public land? What was the first thing you learned?
So for me, it just, and everybody's going to say this, but just pressured birds. Mm-hmm. That was probably the biggest thing that, you know, they may gobble great on the limb, but as soon as they hit the ground, and you hear this is such cliche, but you hear this all over the place, but as soon as they hit the ground, you know, just lockjaw is what I call it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think a lot of people associate that. And I did for a long time. I like this morning, to be honest, man, you know, we probably heard 100 gobbles on the limb. This is on public.
Boy.
And then all of a sudden, just nothing. I mean, they did gobble probably the first 10 minutes on the ground, but then nothing. And we made a big move during that time because they flew the opposite direction of what we thought. So we made a big move, and there were three of us, two shooters and one guy filming. And we make a big move, and I kind of periscoped up out of this little dip, and they had been gobbling the whole way up to him, and then they just went quiet. And I was kicking myself, but in the back of my mind, I'm like, you know, there's no way they saw me, you know, and I just kept telling myself that. And lo and behold, and this is what I'm getting at, I think so many people, they think that they're out of the game. Whenever you're really not, and typically on public land, and I'm speaking from experience here, and a lot of bad calls. I may have thought that the birds were just gone. I busted them out. Even if you don't hear the putting or whatever, I was like, well, maybe a hen caught me or something moving. You know, I was trying to make a big move, swing around on them, get ahead of them. Well, most of the time, those birds have not seen you, and they are typically in full strut on their hens, if they do have hens with them. And it never fails, man. This morning, that's exactly what happened. I mean, we hit this little draw, and I periscope up. They quit gobbling. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. You know, I'm kicking myself. I felt so bad. And I was like, I probably messed this whole thing up. Well, lo and behold, we hear just a short gobble. So Jake, I'm assuming is a Jake. Mm. And they were 80 yards from us, 80, 90 yards from us. And sure enough, we kind of peek around this corner, got the binos on them. And sure enough, there's five strutters in the field. So five long beards.
Man,
so
you bring up a great point there. Like, there are so many times you think you've seen the whole field or you think you know the whole situation, but there are a million little places a turkey can hide in a wide open field. And I'm sure hunting Kansas, like out there in flatland and stuff, it would be real tempting to just assume it's flatland. Like if I'm not seeing them at all times, I think there's something very human about that. Like this idea of if I can't see this bird right now, I've probably blown the whole thing. But what you're saying is you got to be a little more patient than that, huh?
You do. You do. And, you know, honestly, and something that I kind of associated to turkey hunting was through predator hunting. I used to be a big coyote hunter. And I can't tell you how many opportunities I blew because, you know, I was like, man, nothing's coming in. Because you're so used to all these videos you see of coyotes just coming, just flying to a call, you know, or perking up on a terrace out in the field, you know. Mm-hmm. There were so many times that I would do like a 15-minute call sequence. You know, I'm not saying I'm calling the whole 15 minutes, but like, okay, there's nothing showing up. I need to get up and move. I'd stand up, and I kid you not, so many times. I could count on numerous times. A coyote was dead run right to me. And if I'd just given him a little more time, I would have killed him.
Yeah.
Probably saved a turkey or two.
That kind of stuff will mess with your mind because like for every time that's happened, I'm sure you can recall a time where you sat there for 3 hours and it didn't do you any good.
Oh, yeah.
So like in your brain, like yesterday morning I sat and I committed to this decoy setup. I kept hearing birds gobble. I kept calling, they would respond. I just kept doing it. And after an hour, I was like, what am I doing? I've waited till the birds stop gobbling and have moved off before I ever made a move on them. And I felt like the biggest dingus in the world. But so there is something to that. Like you gotta, and that comes with experience, doesn't it? Like knowing
it does
when you're being too patient, you know, to the point of maybe laziness, or when you're being not patient enough. To the point where you're spooking birds.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll use this morning as a prime example of that. So, you know, in the back of my mind, you know, I was like, man, I just don't see how these birds saw us. I really don't. And sure enough, they had stayed there and they were just in this little bitty clearing on the edge of this little field trying to get out of the wind. It was pretty windy this morning.
Oh, sure.
And I'm actually in Missouri right now, but I won't drop the coordinates or anything, so these birds are just locked on this one hen. And so there were five long beards and three of them were strutting and you could tell two of them were 2 year olds. They come try to grab the hen, three big birds, you know, I don't 3-4 year olds, who knows, they've run them off, you know. And we just watched this cat and mouse game back and forth, really cool to see on public, you know. I mean, really, really cool to see, especially when you pull up to a parking lot and there's six trucks there. Jeez. So, you know, we got very fortunate, but these birds were so keyed in on this hen that, you know, we would call, they might answer us, might not, or they'd pop back into strut. And we were really had our hands tied because there was nowhere we could go. I mean, it was just wide open all the way to them. Well, we did have a strutter. And I told my cousin, I said, man, if we just raise this strutter up.
Yeah.
And I will caution to this.
Right.
I will caution to this kind of technique, especially, you know, luckily there in the parking lot, we talked with my cousin had talked last night whenever he roosted these birds with three of the trucks that were there.
Okay.
And they were all together, and you know, he told them the birds that we were going to be going after, and they're like, oh yeah, we roosted some other birds on the other side of the property. So we kind of, you know, we knew that we shouldn't have anybody on us. And then we ran into one of the other guys this morning, talked to him, and he was going another direction. So, you know, we kind of knew who should be around us, but you just never know. Right. You know, you never want to take it for granted.
Right.
But, so I will caution to that. I will caution to, moving decoys and crawling up behind a decoy. But anyway, my cousin, he edges out, pushes the decoy out, starts to come back. Sure enough, those birds break. And I mean, it's just like a magnet, you know.
Oh, beautiful.
And the three longbeards come running in, and they caught him moving. They caught my cousin moving.
No.
They see him, and they start taking off to the right, way out of range. He can't do anything. And about that time, the two other birds, the two-year-olds, you know, they're 8-9-inch beards.
Sure.
And they come running across the field trying to whip this decoy.
Beautiful.
And he pulls up and sadly wounds one of them.
Oh, man.
And so technically his tag is punched. He felt sick about it. They're still in there looking for the bird. And hopefully, you know, hopefully fingers crossed, good Lord willing, they do find the bird. But we're like right on the edge of private and public right there where we were. So they're trying to get permission. But that right there, you know, it's just watching birds like that and respond to each other, and then watching how they react to a decoy. There's nothing better than that. I mean,
nothing better.
You know,
and you know, man, I think a lot of times, man, people shouldn't be so hesitant to get out to public land, because like you're saying, you know, you're hearing 100 gobbles. Like, man, that sounds like a horrible place to hunt. I wouldn't want to be there. Like, what?
It was insane.
And dude, I've just spent
a good morning.
I've spent like the last week hunting like permission pieces I've had and stuff, and feeling like it's falling off, and being like, man, this, that. And like, man, there's nothing stopping me from going out on public. And there's birds out there. And, you know, sometimes I think that private land is more pressured than public. And I think it is around here.
Like
opening morning, I went to hunt a bird on a permission piece, and there was another truck there. And I'm like, what is happening here? So I had to wait until like the middle of the day for that person to leave so I could go down there and hunt. And should have probably just gone home. Yeah. But, you know, I think that that's an important first lesson, you know, like if you're trying to level up your turkey hunting. Number one, don't say no to something before you've been out there and done it.
Yep.
Get out there on public land. Know that they're going to stop gobbling immediately when they get off the roost.
Pretty much.
So be in there. What are some other things you've learned so far doing that?
Okay, so I'll use a bird that I killed. I want to say this was in 2018, I believe. And see, in Kansas, we're fortunate because we have an early bow season. So we can get out before shotgunners. And I still love shooting them in the face with a shotgun. Don't get me wrong. But I love, my favorite thing to do is chase them with a bow. That's probably about my favorite thing to do out there. And just the added, it's a challenge. I mean, it's definitely a challenge. But if you have a state that you can do that in, and you can, typically those seasons are a little earlier than shotgun openers. You know, it allows you to get on birds that are a little less pressured, especially if you're talking public. So I want to say this was in 2018. I went into this piece, and I was going there. I hadn't roosted these birds at all. I just was going off of past experience, and we had killed two birds in that same section the year before, and I'd taken a youth hunter, and then I had killed one as well. And I was like, well, you know, they like this one creek bottom. It's real rolling hills in that area, believe it or not, in Kansas.
Shocking. But, it does happen.
But it does. But so I get up on this top, and sure enough, they're down in this bottom, and just right off this creek edge. And I get as close as I could, and I set up, and I just figured it was, you know, a done deal. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a Jake and a hen decoy, and just put the Jake right over the hen. You know, I'm sitting there, and nothing happens. They actually venture off, and the hens pull the birds off. There were two long beards, and pull the long beards off, and you know, a lot of trying to think of the best way to say this, but a lot of people, and I'm guilty of this as well. Once hens pull birds off or they go silent, a lot of people just give up, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm very guilty of that myself.
Oh, me
but
too.
I was like, you know what? And if I remember, I'd only had like this one day to hunt for like the next 2 weeks, and it's all I had. And I was like, you know what? And in Kansas, we can hunt, you know, the whole day. Yeah. We can hunt all the way to sunset or 30 minutes before. And I was like, man, I'm just going to stay with these birds. I think they're going to stay on this piece. They're just going to kind of filter down through this bottom. There's a couple little open fields. There was a burn area too. And so, like, you know what, I'll just stay with them, or if I can. So I just paralleled them. And it took me, and this is no joke, by the time I ended up killing the bird, and I believe the only reason I killed him, the hens ran off. And I don't know if Jake's pushed them off. I couldn't really see what was going on. Uh-huh. But the hens for sure lost the gobblers. And if you're in the right place whenever that happens, typically I like to say it happens around 9 o'clock, between 9 and 10.
Yeah.
It, you know, late morning for me. Uh-huh. That's typically how it seems to happen. And if you can be there whenever that happens on a bird, 90% of the time you're going to have a really good chance of calling that bird into range. And that's what happened with this one. And, you know, I want to say I killed him at like 9:30 that morning. And, perfect. You know, that's torture, you know, listening to him for, I mean, he would hammer off. It wasn't like super regular, but I've honestly just let him do his own thing. I barely even called at him after I realized he was with that flock of hens. It's like, there's really nothing. You can't outcall a live hen. I mean, there's just no way. But
yeah, man.
But anyway, I will say
that's a great story. That's got. I'm starting to notice a theme already. It's don't give up just because you assume the bird is over.
Yeah, honestly, that's. And maybe it's too much bullheadedness and stubbornness in me. I don't know. But because I've had it go the exact opposite way. So don't get me wrong. I have had it go the exact opposite way. And I probably should have just pulled the plug and went somewhere else, you know. But, you know, it's public land. And I think that's as bad as this sounds. On public land, unless I know I might mess up somebody else's hunt,
sure.
I feel like it's probably one of the use public land to learn. Like your private land stuff. Yeah, you might bump those birds onto the neighbor, you know, and because I have done that, made bad mistakes, bumped them onto the neighbor, and I've heard a shotgun go off. Uh-huh. You know, I have had that happen. Uh-huh. but I really think with public, I feel a little more daring, you know, because it's like, okay, it's now or never. You know,
yeah. Well, and you got room to roam. Like when you're hunting private land, all you end up doing is going from fence line to fence line, looking for turkeys on the neighbor that maybe you can pull over to your side while spooking the birds on your own piece. And like, if you're on public land, you can be there all day. Like you were saying in that story, you just hung with those gobblers and you're like, hey, you're going to get sick of these hens eventually, or they're going to get sick of you. And there's going to be a little sweet talking from just over behind this bush that you really should come check out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I will say this, I've got a good friend of mine that's a really very successful turkey hunter. And, I wish I knew the number of birds he's killed, but it's something ridiculous. Yeah. And, he's like 33, I think. Oh, nice. It's insane. But, I want to say this was 5 or 6 years ago. You know, I've always been somebody that I used to call pretty passively. Mm. You know, I was like, well, I don't want to overcall.
Sure.
Well, there is a right and wrong time to call for sure.
Absolutely.
But I will say this, whenever you have a hen yelping or cutting, whatever she's doing, even if it's just a soft yelp that she's doing and a bird's on her and strutting around her, if you have a strutter with her, probably one of the most, and you know, I should put it this way. If you know that bird is not going to leave the hen.
Yeah.
Okay. And you know, it's going to be probably an all day deal that he's with that hen or multiple hens.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing to do to kill that bird without a doubt is tick that hen off.
Yeah.
And if you can do that, I've probably killed the vast majority of my birds were doing that exact thing.
Mm.
Was hen yelping and I would cut her off.
Yeah.
You know, same tone, but I would cut her off. And then once she got a little more excited, and it sometimes can take 20, 30 minutes, you know, until she's finally like, okay. And it's normally the hen that comes in. It's normally the hen that comes in first. Rarely will the gobbler be the first one to come into that.
Right.
But typically the hen comes in and she's honestly just coming in to investigate or just, you know, establish a pecking order is normally what it is.
Absolutely.
And I have killed a lot of birds and called a lot of birds for people doing that exact thing right there. But
yeah, I want to dive in a little bit on that. So I've had situations like this happen before where you call the hen in and the tom will follow. But like, say the hen will come into 5 yards, whereas that tom will just barely break into shooting range, you know, before the hen figures out you're not there and runs off. So like, if you're calling in a bird that you know you're not going to shoot, hoping to shoot the second bird, are you like really trying to make sure you've got a good hide? Are you making sure everything's set and your gun's up and you're using like a mouth call? Like, how do you deal with having a bird way too close to you that you really can't spook while you're waiting on the other one?
You're exactly right. Hide is 100% like probably the most important thing out there.
Yeah.
You know, turkey eyesight is just, it's unbelievable. I mean, the smallest of movement, you know, public or private land bird, I don't care what it is.
That's right.
They will pick it off. And, you know, for me, you know, just picking a tree, like let's just say you're in a big hardwood flat or something like that, or on a ridge, a lot of big oaks or walnuts or whatever, wherever you're hunting, you know, making sure that your whole back and everything, it just blends into the tree.
Yeah.
Try to pick a tree wider than you. I've made the mistakes that, you know, it's like you have a bird gobble and you have nowhere to go and you post up against a little tree and it's this little bitty thing, you know, and most of the time that bird's going to pick you off. I've had that happen way too many times.
Yeah. They'll think there's a tree growing out of this guy's head.
Yeah, exactly. It's hard to hide movement in, you know, if you don't pick something bigger than you, as far as cover goes.
Absolutely.
I do agree with you. Like, you know, if that hen or hens or a jake or whatever it is comes in before the gobbler and that gobbler's hung up at, you know, right there at the edge of shooting range or he's like fixing to break, but you see that, you know, you see that hen's head just go periscope mode, you know, that's tough. I mean, there's no real, you know, every situation is going to be a little bit different, but that situation is probably about the worst scenario.
Yeah.
having hens or multiple hens or a jake real close to you. It's tough. It is very tough. But, if I go into a situation that I know I'm trying to tick off a hen and call it in, most of the time I'm going to have the nastiest cover I can have.
Yeah.
And whether that's back into a cedar tree, which I hate cedars, but also love them.
But, dude, it's like that.
It is. Multiflora rose bush, you know, something like that. As nasty another as those hate. Are, they are great cover.
Yeah.
But no, it's. Yeah. Hens are, hens can be the death of a turkey hunter without a doubt. I mean, they tip off they save a lot of gobblers. I promise you that.
they pull them away. They let them know when there's danger.
Oh yeah.
They're really the biggest opponent a turkey hunter can have sometimes is a hen. Yeah.
Cause exactly.
Man, that's the truth. But I like, so general best practices, let's break this down. So, okay, you're going in, this bird is on a hen. You want to call that hen in. to get that gobbler to come over. So you're going to cut her off when she's yelping. You're going to just make her come over and investigate you. I've had it before where you can just do soft yelps and they'll come in. But either way, you need them to come in. So that hen's going to come in. So you need to have good cover. You need to have your gun up. And if you don't have somebody else calling for you, you probably better have a way to do hands-free calling. And like I'm imagining, like, for you, once that hen's in, you're done calling because the jig is about to be up. Because there's still the benefit of a doubt. If she comes over to the edge of the woods that you're sitting in or whatever, or up to the edge, she might just assume, well, it's this hen has just walked off or whatever. But if you're calling when she's already up there, you're really going to, like, make it known that you're not quite right. So you want to just have everything ready where all you have to do is click off the safety and squeeze the trigger on that Tom, right?
Exactly. Exactly. No, you're exactly right, man. I do use a diaphragm call a lot.
Yeah, me too. I never have anybody hunting with me. So like I started on a box call because that was a call that had been a hand-me-down from my great-grandpa that I had.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, when you start, you just use whatever. But I never even bought a slate call or another box call. Yep. I went straight to the diaphragm because I was like, I am by myself all the time. And then like I try to film and stuff too, which some days I wonder why I even try because I mostly don't succeed. But you know,
I understand.
Turkey hunting is too easy. Anyways, it's just something that I do. So yeah, diaphragm call is a big tip for because, you know, a little bit of jaw movement is a lot better than setting down your shotgun, picking up a call.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. No, you're exactly right, man. You know, if you don't have a decoy spread, I will say this. You know, if you don't have a single hen, I've killed honestly more birds over anything with just a single hen.
Yeah.
Public or private. Mm-hmm. Just a single hen. And you know, a lot of times if you're able to break that hen in and she, you know, you're cutting her off and sometimes, like you said, it doesn't take a lot of, you know, like sharp cutting, you know, just like real high pitched, just real excited stuff to make her mad.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, what I've found for me is if she's just soft yelping, just answer back with the same tone. And if she picks up, you pick up and just play that game back and forth. And whenever I say cut them off, like whenever they are mid yelp, like, you know, 4 to 5 notes is typically what a yelp is. Cut them off mid yelp.
Yeah.
And there's something about that just really, it just sends them over the edge. It really does. Yeah, but for sure. Like you said, if that hen comes into, you know, 5-10 steps and you don't have a decoy, as soon as you see that hen, as soon as you can get eyes on a turkey head, for me, I stop calling.
Yeah.
Unless I have a decoy. If I have a decoy, you know, maybe, you know, that'd definitely be the one outlier that you could probably call a little more.
Yeah, if they've got something but to look at, you can get away with
exactly.
More.
Yeah. If they're coming in and, you know, and I don't think people realize how well any turkey, gobbler, longbeard, jake, hen, doesn't matter what it is, how well they can pinpoint sound. They know where you're at, like they do. And you know, if I've always said that I feel like those birds that come in silent, you know, and let's say you're sitting there and you don't even hear any spitting, drumming, you know, they're not even coming in strutting, but you heard them gobble 200 yards out, and then all of a sudden they're, you know, 20 minutes later, they're on you.
Yeah.
And you haven't called very much during that time. That'll tell you how, I mean, it's just like laser focus for them. They just know how to pinpoint that sound. I don't know what it is, but they do. They really do. So yeah, biggest thing in any kind of hunting, just staying still, having a good hide.
Yeah.
Like you said, have your gun up.
Man, I want to dive in a little bit on this, when they stop gobbling thing, because this happened to me like yesterday, and I was really torn because, like, you know, you sometimes one will be, you know, you'll call, they'll gobble, you'll call, they'll gobble, you'll call, no gobble, you'll call, no gobble, you'll wait and you'll wait, and you're like, okay, is he A, coming right in, or B, do I need to get my butt down there before he's gone? And like that little like back and forth is always something that trips me up. Have you ever found anything that helps you know maybe which one you should do?
Man, if you don't have eyes on a bird, like you can't see what he's doing, it is such a gamble. Every bird has a different personality. I will always say that.
Yeah.
And some birds are more skittish than others. Some are just bullies from the day they hatch.
Yep.
And
diet too.
Yeah. But I don't think there's a right or wrong answer. I really don't.
Depends.
It's just every situation's different. And I would hate to say one thing and somebody go try it and then it messes their hunt up, you know, because it's always, you know, just using your best judgment, you know, that's the biggest thing.
Cause that's the thing. You're the one in the woods. So you have to make that call. You can't rely on what, you know, you heard one time to work every time, but you got to go through your brain. You got to go through that mental Rolodex. Like, okay, I've heard this based on what's going on. What do I think my situation is? And you know, it is wild to me how many people think that hunting advice has to be either a be all end all or just wrong. Like it's either completely right or completely wrong. And it's like, man, I could say, hey, always do this. And for half the people out there, it would work every time. And they'd be like, you know what? That's the best advice ever. Whereas 50% of people could go out and do that and it would work horribly for them all the time. And they'd be like, this person's an idiot. And like,
don't listen to this. Yeah.
This is the deal. This is hunting advice. This is not hunting fact because there is no such thing as a hunting fact. Like if you went down to the lake and you listened to every guy who's ever caught a fish and you've been like, how'd you do it? And they're like, well, I got this hot dog and I put it on top of the bobber and I started popping it and a 10-pound largemouth bit it. You're like, that's not, that's not a tip. That's a fluke.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So you have to be able to make a more nuanced decision in the woods. You have to have lots of ideas and then you yourself have to figure out what the right call is and you got to just do it, whatever it is.
You're exactly right. You are exactly right. I, you know, something in the last 6 years, I guess, 5-6 years now that I've gotten big into is elk hunting. And, you know, for me, it's literally turkeys on steroids. I mean, that's what it is. And, you know, a lot of your same calling sequences, I mean, it's based off a lot of the same things you use in the turkey woods. And I the only outlier is that you've got to worry about scent as well. So it's different, don't get me wrong, but there are so many similarities, man. It's crazy. Like it really is. And that buddy I was telling you about that's a insanely successful turkey hunter, he's also a very successful elk hunter. And you know, whenever I first got into elk hunting, he told me, he said, man, he's like, do exactly what you do in turkey hunting and just play the wind. He's like, blend whitetail and turkey hunting, if that makes any sense. And you'll be a decent elk hunter.
That sounds impossible. But,
it does, but it does work though, man. It really does. But I think, I don't know. I think with turkeys, you know, it's such a, I think so many people, like it, let's say you're the 2 or 3 or 4 year, you know, just starting into it. You've been hunting for 2 to 4 seasons, you know, you've heard a lot of gobbling, but whenever you hear that gobbling, it gets you excited. And it does everybody. I mean, I still do fist bumps. I still, you know, like, you know, it's awesome, man. And I hope I don't think I will ever lose that fire. I mean, it's, I love it. But I think so many people get caught up in hearing that gobble.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, we need to set up right here. And that's another tip I will say. Whenever a bird gobbles, let's say you're going, moving through the woods and you call and a bird responds, you have more time than you think.
So
I've made the mistake before multiple times that I hurried and tried to find, you know, I'm scrambling around looking at every tree, every brush pile. Uh-huh. Like, can I get there? Can I get here? Where's my shooting lanes? You know, freaking out basically is what I was doing. And you have way more time than what you think. I'm not saying you have 30, 45 minutes, right. But instead of 2 or 3 minutes, like you might think you do, uh-huh. you've probably got 10 minutes. I mean, you really do.
Yeah.
And depending on how far that bird is, but let's say the bird's 200 yards.
Yeah.
You have more time than you think.
Oh yeah.
And so the best thing that I've found is just like, and I know in the heat of the moment, it's easy to say that talking right here, but probably the most important thing, whenever you strike a bird, like mid morning or whatever it may be, they're off the roost, you know,
yeah.
You strike a bird, just soft calling, just take your time, look around you, find a tree, brush pile, rock, whatever it may be, get you a good hide. And yeah. then the rest, you know, just let it play out.
Yeah.
And just take a breath.
That's it, man. I think that's a big thing too. In all these things you're saying, there's an underlying theme of you've got to be in control of your emotions. Like you've got to be able to control that excitement until the job is done. Yep. Like you hear that gobble and you start, you know, panicking, looking around, you run to cover or something. And yep. like, man, a gobbler that's coming in strutting, you know, about half the time he's going to be turned around facing away from you. So yep. like, not only do you have more time, but he's not seeing as well as normal yep. because he's all bristled up and he's looking around. And I think that that's so important because, dude, I spent the first several days of season just like, anytime I heard a gobble, no matter how far away, I would sneak in. I would set out my full decoy spread. I would do a whole, yep. like, clear out all the leaves. I'd get in here. I'd set up this whole thing. And, like, that was too much. Yep. By the time I did all that, the bird is who knows where, right? And if I would have just remembered, like, hey, you've got some time to work this bird. And, like, you need to – sometimes you got to strike the bird first and then get ready for him. You can't get ready for him and then strike him all the time. So you got to go in there with this attitude of, hey, if he strikes real close, I'm going to get ready as quick as I can, but I'm going to use my brain. I'm going to bring my brain with me while I'm setting up. But, dude, once that blood rushes to your heart, your higher brain functions go away.
You're exactly right, man. I've seen people, and I've lost my mind as well. Don't get me wrong.
Me too. But
I've seen people just lose their cool, man. And it's awesome to watch, it's all, if you're there with them, it's so cool to see, you know, and
that's why we do it.
Exactly. I get more fired up over getting somebody else on a bird than I do myself, just because I love seeing that fire in someone. I love, oh man, there's nothing like it. There really isn't. And, I think the whole theme, like you said, I think the whole theme behind all of this, if I look at my past hiccups and some success, you know, the biggest thing that I've learned over countless seasons has been just being patient, but at the same time being calculated about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, not being, like you said, almost too passive, you know, and sitting in a double bull blind for it. And that does get birds killed.
Well, that's the definitely thing, man. Gets birds, like, killed. Everything can work sometimes.
Oh yeah, it can. Right. It can. Yep. It 100% can. I would just encourage people to, and I know it's a huge fad across the United States right now to go to public land.
Yeah.
But I'm going to tell you, there's some incredible public out there.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of states with a lot of it.
Yeah.
And I feel like it can kind of force people out of their quote unquote bad habits.
Yeah, man.
It did me, man. And I still make horrible mistakes. I'm human, but I make stupid mistakes every day in the woods, but it's also taught me crazy things that I honestly, just hunting private, I don't know if I would have learned for the rest of my turkey hunting career. I really don't.
Yeah.
But you know,
I think turkey hunting, like hunting private land, a lot of times is like a picture. like you get a picture of hunting.
Yeah.
And then like maybe you go out to public land. Now you're watching a video. You're seeing everything that went on. You see the whole, you know, the whole piece of the pie instead of just part of it. And I know that like last year I did a little, or no, it was a couple of years ago, did a little turkey public land hunting. And one of the quickest things I learned was that there were like 9,000 feral hogs on this piece. And we saw one hen run in front of us on the way in and heard no gobbles. And like, so sometimes what you learn is don't hunt there.
Yeah.
But that's the thing with public land is you got lots of spots to move to.
You do.
Yeah.
You do. And just being able to be mobile. I don't know. I think that's, there's more and more people figuring that out. Mm-hmm. And they're like, man, you know, I can just bounce from place to place to place. And, you know, it's fun, man. It really is. And I will say this, in Kansas, we've got a lot of public, you know, we have different cases of public. So you might have state ground, you might have federal ground, or you might have walk-in, you know, it's actually privately owned, but they lease it out to the state.
Yeah.
And that changes, walk-in especially changes every year. So that's a really, it's cool to see like the rollover and what places become public and what places fall out of public. Mm-hmm. And I've got on some really good stuff that I'll put it this way. So opening morning of Kansas bow season.
Yeah.
I want to say that was that the 6th or the 8th. I can't even remember now.
I sure
My days
know.
Are all running together. Anyway, one of those days, I went out to a piece of public, and just off of, I had actually shed hunted out there.
Okay.
This early spring, I guess, late winter, and found there's never birds in this piece at all. Mm. Like never are. It looks like the most unbelievable turkey habitat you'd ever see in your life, but for some reason there just haven't been birds in there. Well, I was shed hunting and ran across quite a bit of scratching. I was like, I'll you know, put this in the back of my mind, and you know, I might have to come hunt it. Well, I overslept opening morning, like bad.
Love that.
You'd never think that happened on opening morning, but it did. And really don't have any excuse other than I thought I hit snooze and I hit shut off. You know? But luckily I woke up.
That'll get me a lot of times.
Yep. But I had in my mind to go to this one place, which was about 45 minutes to an hour away on public. And definitely didn't wake up early enough to do that, to make it while they're still in the tree. And I was like, you know what? I'll go to this other place. And it was pretty close in proximity to the house. And and it was that place that I shed hunted.
Yeah.
And keep in mind, never have seen a bird in this piece at all.
Gotcha.
I've seen them on the private side about a mile and a half away. So, you know, they're kind of in the vicinity, but I've deer hunted that place a ton and never have seen or heard a bird in there really at all. And, I was like, you know what? It's open the morning. I've got to go somewhere. So I go in there, only truck in the parking lot. And which is a miracle, but I pull up there, only guy there. Yeah. I'm super late. I mean, it's cracking daylight really good by this time. And push the truck door shut, and I hear pow off in the creek. And I'm like, are you kidding me?
Oh, yeah.
So I played cat and mouse. I didn't end up shooting one of those birds. They played the private and public line game with me.
Yeah.
And but I ended up, there were 40 some odd birds in that group. Wow. And this is a place that I've never, guys, and this is public land. You know, I think so many people associate public land with, well, it's going to be over hunted. There's not going to be as many animals on it. This is no joke. I've still got a couple pretty decent private pieces for deer and turkey. But some of the stuff I found on public would just blow away.
Yeah.
My private stuff, just blow it out of the water. And I think that right there, you know, it's out there. Why not take advantage of
it? That's right, man. That's right.
You know, we all own it.
That's right.
We all own it. We may as well.
But, and you know, the more people that are out there on it, the more people that are going to care about it. And so when people want to take advantage of it, when they want to sell it off, when they want to do stuff that's not helpful, if we've got a lot of people that care about it, that is going to help all turkey hunters everywhere. And I think that's really important.
Exactly.
I wanted to dive into something you said earlier about being mobile. So this is a is a constant struggle that I have, is like how to find the right amount of gear, you know, for yourself. Like I had a guy on a podcast a couple weeks ago. He talked about he's got a 410 with a butt pouch and a piece of rope that if he gets too hot, he'll tie his extra layer to and hang it over his shoulder. That's how he's doing it. He's got his diaphragm call in his shotgun butt pouch, and that's it. Whereas, like, sometimes, like, I get so ridiculously overpacked that, I'm like, man, if anyone saw me right now, they'd be like, are you moving into the woods? So, like, so what's your setup like? Because I think this is a thing of going from, like, an okay turkey hunter to a good one, or from a good one to a great one, is, like, getting your gear dialed in, knowing what you've got, knowing what you need, and having a good way to pack it. So how do you go about that?
So specifically for public land, you know, I'll have my outer layers or whatever on. I used to carry a vest. I used to hunt a lot with a vest. Anymore, I have a bino harness. And I hunt with a bow a lot. This morning I wasn't, but I typically in that bino harness, I'll have my diaphragms. It's also got a slot that I can slide a pot call in, a slate call. My binos, and I have another pouch off the side. I might throw some jerky or a package of crackers or whatever in, you know, something like that. And other than that, man, like taking a seat, my feet fall asleep all the time because I don't take a seat, but, I don't take a seat, man. Like this morning we were, I think we ended up by the time my cousin actually got a shot on that bird, we're like a mile and a half deep, you know, and it was pretty rough stuff, you know? So if you had all like a whole plethora of decoy spreads, which we had three of us, so we were able to kind of divvy up stuff this morning. So we did take two decoys. But you know, if you're by yourself, just be a minimalist. So like one decoy. And if, in my opinion, and this is all opinion, you know, I'm not saying this is law and gospel by any means, but I've killed so many more birds over a single hen decoy than a big full strutter or a jake. And I don't know what it is, but in the last recent years, I've noticed that jakes, you know, you always hear about bully jakes, like running toms off, you know, especially if it's a single tom, you know, if you have a four or five jakes come flying in, they'll run him off. And it seems like I've seen that more and more. I don't know what the reason behind that is. Other than maybe our bird numbers are finally starting to come back a little bit. So we're starting to see more jakes than we have in past years. But those jake decoys, especially a single jake, unless you know your birds, unless you know that there's like two or three long beards together that strut together, they're probably going to come in and whip that jake. But if you're, if you don't really know the situation and you're going in blind, you don't know how the birds are reacting to decoys, don't gamble and take a jake decoy. Just take a single hen. That single hen will, it just does. I don't know. I've honestly, I've watched numerous big long beards spook off of a single jake decoy and throw their head up, periscope around and putt and run off. I've had that on private too. So it's not that, you know,
it happened to me once. I had a spread with like where the jake was about to breed the hen, and I had another hen up, and this big old gobbler, I mean, like his head looked like it was the size of a softball, just humongous bird, comes in, struts, sees my spread and immediately folds down and gets out of there. And I was like, what has happened? And he was also, he was on the limb before daylight gobbling like an unbelievable amount of times. Just constant. And I've heard it before where if a bird is gobbling like nonstop like that, it's because he's been beat up a few times. And like if that hen does not walk directly to him, he's gone. Because he's just, something has got him messed up, you know. And I think I think there's a lot of truth in what you're saying. There's like, what's the gamble with a single hen? Like, yeah, they're not going to run in and try and beat anything up. But like, that's that's what the Tom's looking for, is a hen.
Oh, yeah.
So why not hunt with that?
Exactly. And I think the whole reason I say I stumbled on it, it was just, honestly, it was for more mobility, like you were saying earlier, because a single, they don't weigh anything, you know, a single hen decoy compared to a big strutter, you know.
Oh, man.
But I think another reason was I was bow hunting a lot.
Yeah.
And I wanted that bird to ease in. And typically they ease in better to a single hen or a couple hens than they will a big strutter. A big strutter, we all want to see them come in and beat up a decoy. I mean, that's just, I love seeing that. Don't get me wrong. I love it. But watching a bird and having that time, especially with a bow, you know, drawing back and, you know, selecting your shot, that's a big deal. And I found that with a single hen, I was able to do that way more consistently than anything else, any other setup, really. That's for great. Me, you know.
I love it, but, man. Man, that's so many really good tips about, you know, being a minimalist, hanging out with that bird, not assuming it's over before you know it's over.
Yep.
Because, man, when you really screw it up, you usually know. Birds are so kind in that they will let you watch, you know, they'll let you watch them run away. And it looks like a dang cartoon. You know, like a turkey running full tilt is the goofiest looking thing in the world.
It is.
And it just makes you feel so dumb because you're like, a bird that looks that stupid has made a fool out of me, a human.
Just schooled me, man.
I love it, man. Well, hey, I can't thank you enough for being on here. I wanna let you go so you can get back out there after them birds. I really appreciate your time, man. Thanks for being on the podcast.
No problem. Thanks for having me, man. This was fun.
Well, that wraps up this episode of How to Hunt Turkey with Madison Cole of Mad Guy Outdoors. You should give him a follow on Instagram. He did a great job. And man, thank you guys so much for listening to the podcast. You're the reason I do this. I love the idea of getting to help people learn a little bit more about turkey hunting. And so, hey, if you got any questions, you can email me at howtohuntturkey@gmail.com. You can also follow me on social media. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. All that stuff, you can follow along. And hey, if you got something nice to say, comment it, because boy, the people who don't have something nice to say are commenting. So, man, I just appreciate you guys listening so much. If you got a chance to leave a 5-star review, please do that. That helps me out a ton. And what would help me the most of all, tell a buddy about this podcast, tell them to listen, tell an enemy, heck, I don't care. And, just, man, I just appreciate it. And I just want to grow this community. You guys have just been so good to me, and I've just enjoyed doing this podcast so much, and I just look forward to continuing it. So thank you guys so much for listening. Take somebody hunting with you this week.